T-minus 92. United Nations Headquarters, Manhattan, New York. Although sedate in relation to the madness outside, the corridors of the UN building buzzed with activity as Dan stepped inside. He walked with Godfrey, unsuccessfully seeking further details on the big news from New Kerguelen, while Tara and Leisha followed behind. A proud aunt, Tara was excitedly showing her alien friend some photos of her holding little Piper. Leisha smiled as Tara swiped through the images. Piper was, in fact, the reason that Tara, rather than Emma, had ventured to New Kerguelen in the messenger's time of need, with Emma's pregnancy at the time having rendered her unable to safely make the trip. Given that it had been Tara's blunt words which ultimately convinced divided factions on the alien planet to unite in the absence of their elders and to recall a threatening squadron from Earth's skies, everyone recognized the important role Piper had played before she was even born.
"You'll meet her one day soon,"
Tara said, momentarily forgetting that the neurological changes involved in the deactivation of Leisha's telepathic uplift power also removed his acquired ability to process human speech.
"Emma will be happy to see you again, too."
Godfrey held a firm hand outwards to dissuade members of some national delegations from even trying to get near Dan at this stage, with the gravitas he exuded ensuring that no words were needed. Dan himself was nominally in charge of things at the United Nations Interspace Contact Agency, almost always shortened to UNICA and pronounced simply as UNICA, but the day-to-day reality was that William Godfrey called the shots. Everything Godfrey did was with the support of President Slater and Chinese Premier Ding Ziyang, Dan's other two deputy planetary liaisons, and needless to say, also with tacit agreement from Dan. This was only Dan's third visit to the building, and his first for some 7 months. His role as figurehead had been suggested largely to bring legitimacy to the agency in the public's eyes, for while his own public standing was no longer universally positive now that he was so closely aligned with these powerful leaders, Dan was also far more trusted by everyday citizens than any politician could reasonably hope to be. Perhaps even more importantly, however, the messengers themselves trusted him more than anyone else. It was Dan with whom they had communicated first, and it was Dan's willingness to repay their altruistic intervention in diverting Comet Il Diavolo that had saved their home world when the shoe was on the other foot. At the time of Unica's creation, New Kerguelen's so-called Great Shelter, a roof-like structure which the messengers explained had been constructed thousands of years in the past to insulate them from their planet's rapidly changing and increasingly dangerous atmosphere, had been in dire need of repair. Unfortunately, the superintelligent AI machines the messengers thought of as their elders had recently ceased functioning, and the knowledge of how to maintain and repair the shelter had been lost with them. Dan and Tara's impromptu diplomatic visit, during which they became the first humans to set foot on another planet, succeeded in calming growing unease on New Kerguelen when the vacuum left by the elders' apparent demise had threatened to spill over into violence on Earth as well as the alien world. But that visit had also revealed something entirely unexpected, that the messengers had grown utterly dependent on the wisdom of their elders, seeing the machines as gods rather than tools, and complacently neglecting to pass knowledge from generation to generation, as had once been the case. Their true ancestral elders had doubtless designed the machines to make their species' life easier, but over the intervening millennia, it was clear that something innate had been lost. When every decision was turned over to machines, it turned out, the decision-making muscles of the species who created them would ultimately atrophy. And so it went that an extraterrestrial race with technologies capable of near instantaneously traversing the galaxy and activating almost unfathomable mental powers had been, in essence, unable to keep a roof over their own heads. Much had been discussed on Earth regarding the pros and cons of attempting to reactivate the remarkable elders, the term everyone used, despite the fact that the machines had more accurately been designed by the messenger's elders. But that was very much an issue for another day. Dan was giddy at the knowledge that might flow from the machines, while more conservative voices spoke of Pandora's box and genies that couldn't be put back in bottles once unleashed. The issue would have to be settled eventually, and though Dan had kept quiet about it in public, his desire to revive the elders was well understood within the corridors of power. For now, however, the focus remained solely on the Great Shelter itself. While Dan had been disappointed that his time on an alien world was essentially spent indoors due to the shelter's presence, he understood from what the messengers told him that it was the only thing keeping them alive in the face of a planetary atmosphere that had unfortunately become inhospitable. Dan had gathered from discussions on lifespans and generational records that the shelter had been in place for something like 10,000 years, and that life in the few hundred years prior to its completion had been immensely difficult as conditions deteriorated. He wasn't clear on whether the elders had assisted in the huge construction project, or if they had been developed shortly afterwards by the messenger's same highly capable forefathers who had safeguarded their species with the shelter. He was sure that such questions could be answered by the elders, but others would be more pressing. The only positive decision Unica's consensus-driven assembly had ever reached was permission for the joint Chinese-American shelter repair crew to travel to New Kerguelen twice on the messenger's mothership, first to determine the scope of the project and then to return with the necessary materials. The shelter was now almost fully repaired, with the physical task having proven very straightforward for a small human construction crew. The Earth-like atmosphere within the shelter and the grateful friendliness of their hosts made the crew's stay pleasant, by all accounts, and they were due home within a few weeks. Since the decision to send a crew, however, countless other motions had been struck down by what Dan and billions of others saw as needlessly conservative bureaucracy. Simple things like a thorough technological analysis of the propulsion systems in the messenger's spacecraft had been vetoed, as had all attempts to study the cable link system the messengers had first used to communicate with Dan. Lacking any telepathic element, he struggled to see why this was controversial in the slightest and had grown increasingly frustrated by the lack of progress. If Dan had it his way, one human team would currently be trying to revive the elders, while another was reverse engineering the neurological uplift device, and a third was conducting a deep sociological and cultural study of the messengers themselves. He understood why risk assessments and political discussions were needed ahead of major moves like this, but the delays over things as basic as propulsion research drove him crazy. He could only imagine that the messengers, an advanced alien race who were eager to share and cooperate, must have been feeling exactly the same thing. The logic of the most conservative national delegates was that since any transformative new technology could be weaponized, extensive checks and balances had to be put in place before the research began. During Dan's last address to Unica's assembly, he had encouraged compromise and essentially warned the handful of obstructive nations that the messengers wouldn't wait around forever. Since that day, divisions in New York had only deepened, to the extent that Ding Ziyang had recalled the Chinese delegation and openly invited President Slater to join him in doing so. While Slater hadn't gone quite so far as recalling the U.S. delegation, she had tellingly admitted to sharing Ding's frustrations. Godfrey had since made clear to Dan that more than 150 delegates were willing to break away from the stifling confines of the UN and form a new agency, headquartered in Buenos Aires, and with the same executive leadership. The simple fact, as Dan knew only too well, was that there could be no new agency without him. He hadn't asked for the responsibilities thrust upon him, but nor was he shying away. This wasn't even a matter of public opinion, merely a reflection of the reality that the messengers would never cooperate with a political entity that Dan McCarthy didn't overtly and visibly support. "Here we are," Godfrey said, pointing Dan and Tara towards their destination. Godfrey placed his thumb on the door's security pad, prompting it to emit a shrill beep. Leisha then did the same with the remarkably dexterous thumb that complemented his two broad fingers, at which point the door opened. "That part was just for show," Godfrey whispered, turning back to Dan. "You never know who's watching." Inside the room lay a large table with a box-like device in its center, a dozen or so chairs, and nothing else. It was easy to see why Godfrey called it the table room. Neither Dan nor Tara were surprised, both having been in here before, and both having stood upon the table-like communications platform on New Kerguelen, which had inspired this design. Indeed, their recollections and Leisha's assistance in procuring the device had led to the room's development. Godfrey walked forward and took a seat, revealing that he would be in on the interspecies communication to follow. Tara and Dan followed close behind, while Leisha delicately opened a compartment on the top of the translation device, which looked something like a shoebox made of flawless black marble. Leisha produced four cables, handing one to each of the humans and keeping one for himself. All accustomed to the process, everyone then attached one of their own cable's adhesive ends to the tip of their right index finger and the other to the device. This device had come straight from New Kerguelen, with the messengers explaining that something very similar had been used as an intermediary between themselves and the elders whenever particularly complex communication was needed. Dan and Tara had communicated via a similarly equipped table on New Kerguelen, talking to various messengers from caste-like groupings, which prevented them from accessing the communicative powers known to Leisha and a select few others. This device would be studied soon, Dan knew, with potential applications as simple and wholesome as allowing speech or hearing-impaired people to communicate more easily with their loved ones. As an alien stood in front of him, setting up a device that would have seemed like impossible magic just a few years earlier, Dan McCarthy lamented the political bureaucracy that stood in the way of progress. As far as he was concerned, the potential benefits of technological research were so great that the blocks against it were not just scientifically indefensible, but also ethically so. Only five humans had ever used the device, and the two who weren't present this time, Slater and Ding, both knew this meeting was happening, but deemed it politically expedient to keep a distance during the heated summit. With everyone seated and ready, Leisha spoke first.
Hello, friends.